The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Off we go into another week. It is the first week of preseason NFL football. Hold your nose. Clark Judge will be with us for a few minutes on T.O. and the Hall of Fame over the weekend. Cardinals getting ready for the Chargers. Diamondbacks, I'd say a so-so weekend. We had a lot of negative people over on the social media side when the Diamondbacks split a four-game series with San Francisco, saying it was horrible. I don't know. The other team's trying. Trump against LeBron. What people forget about the Trump-LeBron stuff is that LeBron tweeted some stuff and said stuff. Actually said stuff. I should correct that. Said stuff about Trump a year ago. So this is tennis. I'm going to volley. Back and forth we go. I'm going to take a shot. You're going to take a shot. The Urban Meyer story, the happiest person on the face of the planet when Donald Trump sent out that tweet about LeBron James was Urban Meyer, because all the pressure was now taken off him. Thank you. I don't know if Urban's going to make a donation to the Trump campaign coming up. I don't know. Arizona State and Arizona football getting ready for their openers. That's in my wheelhouse. Now they're at practice. And what's another story? Oh, I know. It's a small story. It's story, Eric, you're not going to like this story. I'm even going to bring it up in today's show, but it involves the WNBA and a team that had a 25-hour delay of flight, and they decided not to play a game. And so
I saw that, actually.
Yeah.
I saw something on the bottom line about that.
Yeah, and so
it's, no makeup date announced.
No, and so they just said, we're not going to play. And the CEO of NASCAR has been arrested for DUI and drug possession. It's not good. It's not. If you're the general manager of a pro football team, it's not good. If you're the CEO of NASCAR, it's really not good.
Good point.
It's
really
not good.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So what about you? What was your weekend like? What'd you do? You're a Cardinals for some.
Not much exciting. Yeah, I went out to the Cardinals. That's always
good. Speaking of not much exciting.
No, it's fine. It's good. Football's back. It's fine. And it's early. It's early in training camp. It's not late in training camp. Late in training camp is different than early in training camp.
By what do you mean?
Well, because, you know, it's like seeing the same movie 36 times. I mean, and the people at the Cardinals are excited because last year with the Hall of Fame game, they had close to 6 weeks of training camp.
Ugh.
This year they have barely over 3 weeks of training camp. So, Steve Wilks, bravo. In Glendale. They will be camping. It'll just be at their normal practice facility in Tempe.
I guess I'm looking at the Cardinals, and I want to be optimistic because the storylines to me this year are more interesting.
The Cardinals and ASU football for me are sort of on parallel tracks.
And U of A, too, for me.
Not big expectations, but there's talent there on both teams. And maybe one of those two teams jumps up and surprises some people.
I'll get to that in a second. Let me jump in on this. Our opening comments here, as always, are brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. You need to do that through life insurance. I don't have a script here in front of me. Because I believe in this. And I believe in the people at Sagicor. Okay? So Sagicor, you go to sagicornow.com and you log on. You get your free quote. No waiting, no hassle. And you find out if, in fact, you can make something happen with your family and your future. And you should. Don't put it off. Log on. Get your free quote at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. You didn't mention U of A in that, of what you're interested in.
The smarts think they're going to be the second best team in the Pac-12 South. The smarts do.
Yeah, the Vegas guys.
Yeah, and the media.
I don't know about if we're smart.
The media thinks ASU is going to be the worst team in the Pac-12 South, and a lot of the so-called experts are picking the Cardinals to finish at the bottom of the NFC West.
Sure.
So I wouldn't throw U of A in there. Just they're supposed to be better.
Opening weekend, ASU, UTSA, U of A, BYU, or are you going to a TCU game?
ASU, UTSA.
And what do you think that's going to look like?
Choice.
What do you think that's going to look like?
Probably too close for comfort for ASU fans, but ASU is going to win.
Yeah. Well, it's different than last year. They all wanted Herm fired. I mean, not Herm, Todd fired. They wanted Todd fired. And we're going to have Jordan Simone with us later in the week. Jordan is now part of the broadcast for ASU football. We're going to talk to him about Herm.
One of my favorite Sun Devils.
Jordan Simone?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Like what that guy represents on and off the field. Walked on to two different Pac-12 programs, got a shot in an NFL camp, good teammate, doesn't get in trouble, good leader, good representative for ASU.
Going to be an EMT, you were telling me.
Going to be an EMT, yep.
That's pretty good. A year ago, I felt like Todd Graham was fired. Dead man walking, done, finished. This is not going to end well. And so I went into the season with not very high expectations, other than I thought Kalen Ballage had an outside dark horse chance to be a Heisman Trophy candidate. He did have a big game against Texas Tech, but that was about the extent of it from his ASU career. This year I go into it, and anybody who doesn't put N'Keal Harry as a first-team All-American wide receiver, you are drinking something.
They should have their credential revoked.
They should.
And the only reason I'm saying, Brad, I don't know about UTSA, is because it's the first game of the year, and weird things happen in college football on the first game of the year because they don't have preseason games. I mean, if
Correct.
ASU played UTSA in week six, it would look a lot different than ASU playing UTSA in week one.
No, I agree with you on that. Sure. Look, in football, it's all about when you play somebody. Last year, ASU got so lucky, and there's no other way to put it, when they played Washington. Injuries, timing of schedule, all of that stuff, it all worked in their favor.
And ASU could have lost to New Mexico State last year in their opener. That was a really close game going in the fourth quarter. So that's why I'm looking at the UTSA game saying, you never know. They should win.
I just think that Saturday nights, to see what Herm does and then what he says after the games are over, is going to be must-see. Because how does Herm Edwards handle a loss? I saw where John Wilner does the hotline on San Jose Mercury News.
Yep.
I mean, it's one of those bookmarks you should put in. When John Wilner posts something, you should read it. And he had Herm talking at Media Day about he can't believe the demands on recruiting. Now, Herm has talked about this before. John brought it up again that Herm is still looking at the demands on recruiting. That's what it is, right? So the demands just on the recruiting side are one thing. But Herm Edwards is taking over a program with some guys in positions of influence, the quarterback in particular, that have had their way, that have had their spot. And so you can say all you want, Manny Wilkins leaps over players. It's great to see. But can Manny drive you down the field to win a game in crunch time? Can Khalil Tate take apart BYU as I think he's going to do? Houston, who U of A plays the second week of the season, has one of the top defensive linemen in the nation who's going to try and kill him and rip his head off. So the college football season, to me, and then you add the Cardinals side of the street, where it is, can Sam Bradford be upright? Last year it was, is Carson going to be able to make it through a year? And this is probably it for him. Is Steve Wilks going to be able to push through and be an NFL head coach? Last year was, Bruce's health. We don't know if he's going to stick with it. Chances are pretty good this is going to be it for Bruce Arians. So like the transition year for the Cardinals ended up being last year. This year, I think it's going to be an accelerated transition year. You can't tell me the Cardinals don't have good players on their roster. Do they have enough of them? Are guys like Marcus Golden going to come back and be impactful? Can Chandler Jones continue to be one of the top players in defense? And the same for Patrick Peterson. It's not like they're devoid of star talent. Number 11 is sitting over there. He's pretty good. Last time I checked, he's going to the Hall of Fame. And speaking of the Hall of Fame, up next, Clark Judge. T.O. not showing up at the Pro Football Hall of Fame and doing his own ceremony this weekend, his own gold jacket. Clark is one of the voters. What's his view today? Does he regret his vote? I don't even know if he voted for T.O. I'm going to talk to him about that. And what are his views and expectations of the Arizona Cardinals? We'll go national with Clark Judge, Talk of Fame Network. That is next. Sports360AZ.com, Fox Sports Arizona, our weekly TV show, 16 airings per week. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. Stay with us. Joined now by Clark Judge, Talk of Fame Network. Across the Fruited Plain, he and his group, Rick Gosling, Ron Borges, have grown Talk of Fame into this monster around the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They do a terrific job with their content. You can check them out online and find their broadcasts on their website and other places as well. It is good to have you with us. Was it a great Hall of Fame weekend, or did T.O. take away from it all, from your view?
No, I think it was a great Hall of Fame weekend. I don't think T.O. took away from it at all. I think he actually took away from himself. I think he missed a great opportunity to be there and enjoy the company of others and others in that class. But those seven who were on the stage, I thought were terrific. I thought the speeches were terrific. There was some energy and some power, and it really built to a crescendo with Ray Lewis at the end. But Randy Moss, Brian Dawkins, Brian Urlacher, I mean, I thought it was, I really thought it was one of the best ones that I've been exposed to in a long time.
What did T.O. do to his legacy by doing what he did over the weekend, Clark?
I don't think he did anything to his legacy as a player. I think he only reinforced the legacy that he's not a team guy, that he's sort of an inveterate narcissist who has to have people talking about him. And we're talking about him, and mm-hmm. everyone else is talking about him. But it was brought up during the meeting that he wasn't a team player. That's one of the reasons he kept getting passed on from team to team. And some people said, I don't believe that. Well, he's on the greatest team of all time, the All-Star team of greatest players ever, Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he's still a lousy teammate. So I know why he did it. I sort of feel sympathy for him in some respects, because he can't ever seem to enjoy good moments. Here he was a Super Bowl hero for a Philadelphia losing team in the Super Bowl, and within 2 months he sort of destroyed that legacy by doing the sit-ups in the driveway at Morrisville, New Jersey, and within 6 months then he's kicked to the curb by the Eagles, who suspended him and then ultimately let him go. And here he is. You know, this should be the greatest individual moment of his career, and he finds a way to create controversy and make it more about just me. And mm-hmm. he's just one of eight guys in that Hall of Fame class. He's not the guy. He's one of eight guys, but he can't stand that, and that's sort of why he wasn't a great teammate, too. He's a great player, but he wasn't a great teammate.
Was there regret on the voters' parts when it came to this to get him in?
I know a couple guys who said something, but I don't think so. I mean, certainly not with me, because I didn't vote for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know that for a fact. I would say probably the answer is no, because what dominated that conversation this year was his play on the field, and people were trying to diminish what happened in the locker room and what happened in the huddle and that sort of thing. What about what happened when he made the catches and scored the touchdowns? Those guys who voted for him, I don't think would be dissuaded from voting for him again. And listen, it was a democratic process. They won the day. T.O. was complaining for 2 years he wasn't in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Well, now he's in. Should be happy. So why is he not happy? Well, because he's never happy. He's not happy unless he's miserable. So now it's, all about, the guys who waited. Listen, who's he trying to con? It's not about the guys who waited. It's about one guy who waited, and that's him. And he waited 3 years as a second-team all-decade receiver. 3 years. And as you know, I've said this before on the show, Drew Pearson, the first-team all-decade wide receiver from the 1970s. He also won a championship, unlike T.O. Mm-hmm. He's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He is not in the Pro Football. He's waited over 30 years. Hopefully someday we'll get him in. But I don't know. I just tire of the narrative, and it's worn me out, and I'm just beaten down. I go, good, he's in. Let's move on. Let's talk just about somebody else. Okay. Well, Jerry Kramer waited 45 years,
Sure.
So, I mean, Jerry Kramer waited 45 years and remember the 50th anniversary team. Geez, he showed up. I can imagine that. He was, and that's the thing I loved about it. I mean, there was great joy among the people who were there, and it should be. It was a joyous occasion. People who want to talk about something happened in Tennessee, listen, it's his right to do what he wanted, but it's also the Hall's right to move forward and say, listen, we're celebrating the people who are here, and they did that.
Do you think that this is the last question on this, because there's other stuff that's more important, but it's questions I'm getting asked, and that is, do you think he will be the first and the last, to pull this kind of stunt, or do you think there'll be others?
Well, I never say never. I mean, would there be others? I assume there probably could be, and I see now there's some talk about, should we kind of legislate against it? The answer is no. I wouldn't do anything. If someone wants to hold their own ceremony elsewhere, let them do that. Mm-hmm. Because I would say if I'm the Pro Football Hall of Fame, we'll continue to do what we do. We're going to honor the people who are here. If you want to do it somewhere, you want to do your thing in Kathmandu, fine, do it there. But we're honoring the people who are here, and we're going to talk about the people who are here. So I think you penalize yourself when you're doing that, because honestly, I would think the viewership in the evening for that, for the entire class, is a lot more than would be for a certain individual during the afternoon hours. And so I just think it was a great opportunity that Owens missed to thank those people. Now, he thanked him where he was, but not in front of the viewership that he could have had in Canton, and not among the Hall of Famers that he would have had in Canton.
Talking with Clark Judge, the Talk of Fame Network, all things around the National Football League. Hall of Fame weekend is now behind us. If you look ahead, and you could go on and on and on this, but I'm just curious, do you have three, four storylines that you look at and say, wow, this upcoming season, and it may well be officials and helmet to helmet, Clark. I don't know your view on all that stuff. But do you have this a few storylines nationally that you're looking at?
Yeah, well, that's certainly the front and center. I mean, we want to see how that plays out, how they're going to officiate it, and how they're going to coach it, to be honest with you, and how it plays out. I mean, I saw the game the other night in Canton, and, you know, sometimes I just don't really understand it, I'll be honest with you. I mean, there was one where it looked like both players lowered their head. I don't know how they're going to officiate it. I want to see how that plays out and how it affects games. Certainly individually, I'd like to see what happens with Andrew Luck coming back. Is he the same guy? Is he a different quarterback? Is he impaired? How impaired? The situation in New England, I'm up here in the Northeast. Really kind of curious to see what goes on with Tom Brady at the age of 41. How much longer can he do this? Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about some cracks in the facade of the Patriots. Well, all I know is as long as number 12 is there and playing as he did last year, they're not going anywhere but the playoffs. Everyone else is playing for second there, but at some point he's got to be a diminished quarterback. I know he's different than most people, but at some point age catches up with you. And is it this year? So I don't know. And also I'm really intrigued by the NFC West. How good is San Francisco going to be with Jimmy Garoppolo? He certainly hasn't lost a starting performance, but I think he's had, seven starts, something like that. How is he going to do this year with the 49ers? Because honestly, the end of last year, I thought he was pretty good. And I looked at him, I saw some signs of a really good quarterback who could throw the ball on the move. Could they be a threat to the Rams? And are the Rams a threat to Philadelphia? And speaking of Philadelphia, how's the Wentz full situation play out? When does Wentz get in there? When is he ready? I think that's a tough balancing act for the head coach being Doug Peterson. I think that's a tough balancing act for him. At what point do you take the Super Bowl MVP and say, okay, you got to sit down, we're putting Carson Wentz back in? That's going to be tough, but that's something to watch as well. And one last thing, of course, is Baltimore and Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. What happens there? How's that thing play out? I think there are a lot of pretty interesting storylines, many of which revolve around the quarterback position.
I'm far more interested myself in what's going on out here in Arizona this year. Last couple of years felt stale. You felt like Bruce Arians wasn't going to be here much longer. You felt like Carson was on his way out. They didn't quite have enough. They've turned the page, at least in drafting a young quarterback in Josh Rosen. But Clark, and everything that I've seen and heard about Sam Bradford is, man, he's terrific. We all know he can't stand upright. He always gets hurt. David Johnson comes off a very early season injury. Steve Wilks comes in here from Carolina with a terrific background around him. I know you haven't seen Arizona up close, but from a distance, what do you make out of the Cardinals?
Well, from a distance, I think honestly what most people make out of them is that's a team that's playing for third or fourth from a distance. Mm-hmm. Because you're right, the narrative on Sam Bradford is he's not going to be healthy. At what point does he get hurt? Does he get through training camp? Okay, if he gets through training camp, at what point of the season does he get hurt? Then when does the rookie step in? How good was David Johnson coming back? I mean, and are they better than an 8-8 team? And I would say most people right now, if you poll them nationally, would say they're the third or fourth best team in that division, probably fourth, and putting Seattle ahead of them. Now I think Seattle's a descending team. But so where does that leave the Cardinals? And I think most people would say they're a sub-500 team this year. I'm one of those. I just don't see anything there that really gets me excited. I mean, as I said, Sam Bradford, yeah, I've seen him have his moments, but I've also seen him on the bench for a long time nursing an injury. And so I just wonder what point is he ready? How does he play? Is he the quarterback that he's had injuries as well. Is he the quarterback that the Cardinals think what he could be when they drafted him, or is he the quarterback who's going to suffer a concussion or recurring injuries? What's going to happen there? At what point is he ready? Most people in the draft didn't think this guy was ready to step in immediately. He may have to. He may have no choice. And if that's the case, what impact does that have on the ball club?
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always, Clark. Thanks.
You got it.
Clark Judge, Talk of Fame Network. Always good to catch up with Clark Judge. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. New episode this week. Larry Fitzgerald sits down with Haley Stasiak of our high school Audibles, recruiting roundup on the college end, and much, much more. Thanks for being with us. All right, welcome back. Over the weekend, and actually started on Friday, when Donald Trump tweeted out about LeBron James in a disparaging way, and also CNN's Don Lemon. I knew that it was going to cross over into the sports circle. What I didn't know is that I would be talking about Melania Trump siding with LeBron James. What I didn't know is I'd be sitting here today going through the LeBron versus Trump as an overriding topic of people talking about on the water cooler circuit. The quote from President Trump was, LeBron James was just interviewed by the dumbest man on television, Don Lemon. He made LeBron look smart, which isn't easy to do. I like Mike. Trump's tweet will look by some, I would think, if you are one of those that looks over at Donald Trump and says, I agree wholeheartedly with what he's all about. You would say that this is fair game, since LeBron has never shied away from criticizing the president. Last September, LeBron called President Trump a bum, and so on and so forth. The thing is, on this, this comes as a week after LeBron had his much publicized school that he opened for underprivileged children in Akron, Ohio, which is terrific. And then for Donald Trump to bring Michael Jordan into the conversation, there's a saying in our business, in the broadcast business, if you want to cause a buzz, go after the biggest bully on the block. There's times where I've worked with guys in this business that have started fake fights on the air towards other on-air talent. Eric, you ever been a part of those? You know, when you're over at KTAR and it was like the morning guys would rip on the afternoon guys or the midday guys and they didn't like each other. I don't know if you ever had that happen to you.
Like where it was set up? And like,
well, it, like scripted? On the, on not, I wouldn't say scripted, not like in a meeting.
Okay.
But like on the air, they would take
shots. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just like locker room chatter.
But was it locker room chatter or did it get to a point where they really didn't like one another? Where there really was something personal that was going on and it was handled in a very public manner. I can't think of many, many brawls, media brawls here in Phoenix.
Not many. At a sub level, I'm sure it happened. I mean, a host talking about another host indirectly, but there is a backstory, but they didn't really like air all the grievances on the air, but off the air, there was something there.
There's hosts that have worked together for years and years that don't talk to each other. They do their thing. And
which shouldn't be that surprising, because when you're doing a four-hour show with someone over a period of 10, 12, 15 years, you're going to grow tired of the other person. Like, if I had to see you and we did a four-hour show and I was always talking to you,
you're tired of me after 20 minutes.
No, that's not true.
But no, but
do you see what I'm saying, right?
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
After a while, it's just it can get repetitive. You don't want to see that person 5 days a week for 4 hours a day.
But do you think in Trump's case, like
just keep your mouth shut and run the country.
But somebody somewhere had to say to him, hey, you probably should get LeBron in the middle of this. He's just coming off a big week. Go after the biggest bully or the biggest name possible on the block to get the most buzz.
Right.
I don't subscribe to that. I mean, there's people in town that I like, and there's people I could do without.
And that's been the president's MO, Brad, forever. I mean, he wants to throw himself in the biggest story, and he wants to create a buzz one way or the other.
Correct.
Good or bad.
Correct. But it's not even like those that support the president say it was fair game because LeBron has taken shots at him. I don't have a dog in the fight one way or the other. I'm not going to sit here and say I support one side or the other. That's not what I do. There's plenty of those out there that will say, and you just listen to them, it's okay, they're just going to say this is the way it is all day long. Like Bill the other day was so fired up, Goody Kuntz, on what's going on with this. There was a movie about that had a Trump implication mm-hmm. to it. And Bill's political leanings came out pretty clearly in the mm-hmm. interview, which in our business, sometimes you shouldn't do. I'm not ripping on Bill on that, but it's just harder and harder in this day and age.
And we're right in the midst of presidential fatigue. I mean, I think
even some
of the Republicans are in presidential fatigue.
Sure. It's midterm.
And he's just been a different cat since we've never had a president like President Trump. We may never again have a president like President Trump.
But if he's reelected, then this is going to happen.
No doubt.
This is going to keep going on.
He's not going to change his ways if he's reelected.
But can you imagine on a sports end of things, you know, he's going after LeBron right now, and Michael Jordan has come to his defense, to LeBron's defense, to an extent as much as Michael Jordan, who's never really has said much of anything on any subject. But, Eric, I think as we get closer to the elections, that sports is going to be so polarized and taken over by guys finally saying, okay, this is my political bent. And if I'm the biggest name at Fox, or if I'm the biggest name at ESPN, you know, Jemele Hill tried hard, I thought, the last time, and she got scolded during the run-up to the election. There's going to be people in our position. Who was the girl, front-facing talent? Oh, man, she got busted for ripping on a girl that she was trying to return a car to in Detroit.
Britt McHenry?
Yes. So she has flipped now. She's gotten out of sports, and Britt is now over doing Fox News. And Britt McHenry is now taking the stance of I'm alongside of Donald Trump. Okay. So she made the crossover after going just through hell and back. I think her last game that she did for Fox was the Cardinal game. In fact, I remember she was out at the facility.
Yeah, she got crucified.
Yes. Yeah, she got crushed. But I think that there's going to be more of that coming. And the question is going to be from players. Like, I've always found it interesting when players would sit and talk to you about their political leanings, which they didn't used to do. I remember talking with Steve Nash about stuff going on in our country, or visiting with Steve Kerr a little bit about it. And it's become, in the NBA, kind of like, yeah, okay, this is my view, this is my stance. NFL guys, like, if a star quarterback came out and just every day said, this is my guy, or wore something, or at an event, a fundraising event, media checks out now behind the scenes who they're supporting. I just think there's going to be more of this LeBron attacking, or biggest name attacking. I mean, Donald Trump targeting the press, that's not a surprise. Like, this, that's not breaking news, okay? Donald Trump taking a swipe at LeBron James, that was not really a surprise. It was a Friday afternoon. I believe it was around 4 o'clock our time, like 7:15, if the fact checkers had it right. And, you know, the man that was happiest about all of it was Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer was a winner, because we're sitting here today, and I'll get into this a little bit more in the next segment. We're sitting here today, is the Ohio State story and the fervor to get Urban Meyer out of there what it was last week? No, because the media all ran to the next fire, and that fire was Donald Trump. We'll do some college football after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. So a little college football, and then we'll get over to the Diamondbacks, because Ken Kendrick got kind of crushed today in the LA Times. I'll get to that in a second. The college football end of things, I mentioned earlier about the intrigue that I have in with the U of A and Khalil Tate going up against the Houston Cougars in week number two, because it's Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver is a name that you need to know. If you don't know Ed Oliver, that's a name that, coming into this college football season, is right up there along with Bryce Love. I'd say Nick Bosa at Ohio State. Eric, are there any names that jump out at you if we're talking college football that are bigger than Ed Oliver and Bryce Love and Nick Bosa? Not many, right? And like, Ed Oliver is a defensive lineman that is being pushed by the Heisman people at Houston to try to get him.
He has no chance, but yes, he should be in contention.
He's that good.
He is that good. He's like the modern day Ndamukong Suh. He is that dominant. He is an absolute game changer for Houston.
And so I think that there's some players that, when I go through these lists to start the season out, and I don't see N'Keal Harry at the top of these lists, that goes back to how ASU is just so far off the radar, because there cannot be a better receiver than him.
Well, that's partially due to 7:45 ESPN2 Saturday night stuck in the middle of nowhere games that most people on the East Coast don't ever see.
But don't you think people know Jake Browning and Justin Herbert, and don't you think they embrace
Love?
Yeah,
but they're at national powers. ASU is not a national power. I mean, no offense. ASU is not Washington. ASU isn't Stanford. ASU is ASU.
Yeah. Well, I agree. But Khalil Tate is getting enough buzz.
Different, though, because he's a quarterback.
So what you're telling me is N'Keal, because of his position.
ASU's just been a...
And because it's... But it's U of A's been dog meat. I mean, they haven't been any good.
Right. But Khalil Tate last year was... the buzz of college football. N'Keal Harry has never been the buzz of college football.
He's been
the buzz of ASU.
Khalil Tate's probably the most exciting player. If we're talking about players coming into the season,
I would say Bryce Love and Khalil Tate are right there neck and neck.
Bryce Love, to me, I love him. I voted for him last year, but I think Bryce Love versus Khalil Tate, give me Khalil Tate all day long in terms of excitement.
But Bryce Love played hurt half of last year and still put up ridiculous numbers.
Yeah.
Well, and we saw what happened when Khalil Tate got a little dinged up towards the end of last year. The production went way down.
And I think having Noel Mazzone coaching Khalil Tate.
Scary.
That's one of those.
That's scary.
And if you're an ASU fan, you had Noel here, and Noel's great. If you got Noel Mazzone with Khalil Tate, what is that combination going to look like? Not in week one against BYU, right? It's by the time ASU plays U of A at the end of the season, if he's still upright, if he doesn't take all the shots, I think Khalil Tate's going to be just fabulous under Noel Mazzone.
No doubt.
So I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, the guy like Shea Patterson over at Michigan, there's players that and storylines.
Really good quarterback, Brian.
Yeah.
Really good quarterback.
And you're going to TCU. You're going to go to some TCU games?
Uh-huh.
Who are you going to see?
I'm going to the Iowa State game, and I'm going to the Oklahoma game.
And both those games are at?
TCU.
TCU.
I mean, that's what I have scheduled right now. I mean, who knows what the season might bring. I might sprinkle in another trip.
This is how it works with Eric. I am going to so-and-so via email. That's his way of saying I'm taking time off. Do I have permission? But he just does it, which I'm fine with.
And I'm doing the ultimate double the second week of September. My friend who is from Michigan and grew up – my old college roommate is from Michigan, grew up a huge Michigan State fan. His favorite NFL team is also the Redskins.
Ah.
So Michigan State is playing ASU on Saturday night. I said, hey, guess who the Cardinals are opening their season with in Glendale the very next day of the Michigan State game? The plane ticket was purchased, I think, within like 20 minutes after that. So
when you say do the double, I told you about the double I'm thinking about.
Yeah, it's not that kind of double. It's not like two games, one day, different states. I'm basically going to be going as a fan to ASU Michigan State and the next day as a fan. I think my first ever Cardinal game as a fan the next day against the Redskins.
And I'll be at that Cardinal Redskin game.
Okay. Yeah, I've never been to a Cardinal. I've never sat in the stands for a Cardinal game. Ever.
Me either. Neither. No desire on my part. I just, yeah. you go cover it and work
sure.
it. I'm going to go to, if I can get it, you know, the whole thing on this is we're self-funded. So when sponsors come forward and they say, hey, you know, we believe in what you're doing. We want to help you out. So one of the things I want to do and through the seven, it'll be 7 years next month that we've been doing this, is when you see a good story or the opportunity to do something really cool, U of A plays at Houston at 11 a.m. Houston time. ASU plays Michigan State that night. I want to do that double because there's two really good stories there, really good stories. And then the next day I'll be at the Cardinals game. That's a good weekend for me. That'll be fun. No high school that weekend. The Diamondbacks. So Dylan Hernandez of the LA Times writes today. I'm starting here from the beginning with Dylan Hernandez. I'm not going to read much, but forget about making a statement. Never mind the comparisons to the defending World Series champions. The Dodgers had to win Sunday not to prove anything to visiting Houston, but to catch the Arizona Diamondbacks. Remember the Diamondbacks? You know, the insecure little team in the desert that guards its stadium pool to prevent the Dodgers from celebrating their inevitable triumphs with a swim. The franchise with the whiny owner who blows a gasket when paying customers in the suite behind home plate wear the merchandise of another team. Yeah, them. They're suddenly relevant again, not because they're great, but because the Dodgers are not. Take a swipe. Take a shot. Now, I've missed the Dodgers. We were whining. Speaking of whiny, we were whining back in April and early May of, I am so sick of seeing the Dodgers play the Diamondbacks. And if you go back and look, they played over and over and over. Well, now I can't wait to get into September because of stuff like this, right? The Dodgers and Diamondbacks are both tied atop the division. They're only two games up on Colorado. One of those three teams probably isn't going to make the postseason, and it might be two of those three teams that don't make it. I thought the weekend for the Diamondbacks, you know, playing .500 at home and losing games like they lost yesterday and in game one, not great. Anybody's going to bang on Archie Bradley? Archie Bradley has been terrific. He's been so good. And so yesterday it didn't work out, Those days are going to happen. Evan Longoria took him yard. That's it. What was it? 12 straight games without allowing a run? I'll take that all day long. Anybody who wants to rip on Archie Bradley today, put down the bottle and back away. I think my bigger concern is Robbie Ray. It's been over a month now. He's won just one. I believe it's one win in the last 6 weeks for Robbie Ray. Nobody had that at the start of the season. He went 5 1/3 yesterday and walked 4. There's just something that's not quite right with him. And so Zach Godley, who makes me nervous as all get out, the last time he pitched, he was really good against a bad team. Tonight he's got the Phillies. And so the Diamondbacks at home against Philadelphia tonight, and so we'll keep an eye on that, as they say in the business. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, as always, senior executive vice president of everything. We're going to move over to the web now and work on content, work on our TV show over on Fox, and much, much more. Thanks for being with us.